Now, tributes have been paid to Bethany Home campaigner Derek Leinster after his death at the age of 81. Derek was born in Bethany Home in Dublin in 1941 and was the chairman of the Bethany Homes Survivors Group. He campaigned for over 20 years for the inclusion of Bethany Home and other Protestant institutions in state inquiries and redress schemes. He wanted survivors of Protestant institutions to receive the same redress that was granted to survivors of industrial school abuse under the Residential Institutions Redress Act in 2002. He passed away unexpectedly on Saturday at his home in Rugby, England, his family confirmed. In a statement shared on social media, his family wrote, "Derek fought a tireless battle for many years to gain justice for the mistreatment of babies born into the Bethany Mother and Baby Home in Dublin, a case that was so very important to him. He was a remarkable and incredibly determined man who never surrendered in his fight until the very end. We take comfort in knowing he is now at peace with our beloved and dearly missed mum, Carol." And Derek is survived by his daughters Deborah, Amanda, Gail and Kerry, and predeceased by his wife Carol. Tributes have been paid to him, with fellow survivors and others calling him an inspiration and a remarkable man. And indeed, shortly we'll hear from Neil Meehan, the head of the Media and Journalism Faculty at Griffith College, who knew Derek personally and is also the secretary of the Bethany Mother and Baby Home Survivors Group. Derek Leinster joined us on Kildare Today a number of times to discuss his personal story and update us on his ongoing campaign. Shortly we'll hear the last time that he spoke to us in 2021, but first here's what he said back in 2014.
The Bethany Home was not just a baby and mother home, it was not just a maternity home, it was also an orphanage, it was a children's home, and it was a detention centre for people under the age of 17, and it was also a prison for women who fantasised with their babies when they were found out that they were pregnant. They ended the lives of their own children. They were sent from the four courts in Dublin to the Bethany Home. In actual fact, because they were Protestants, they were given a choice that they could serve the time in the Bethany Home or in the prison service, the state's prison service, and they always chose the Bethany Home. So it's very clear that it's indefensible, their arguments. They know that. They know eventually that we'll have to address it. There won't be anywhere left now to hide. I want this issue to cover not just the children who died, but also I want it to cover the young mothers who had their children wrenched from their arms and allowed to die in such terrible conditions. And also they were adopted and sold and got shut off all around the world. Unmarried mothers in a very dangerous place for a young Irish pregnant woman to be was Ireland in them days, and they went through horrific experiences. And I give you my own experience is that my mother at the age of 90, even her, she could not even come to accept the situation, even at 90 getting into her own coffin. The gap was too big for her to reach, to overcome what she went through in the terms of being a mother of an illegitimate child.
The late Derek Leinster speaking to us back in 2014, and here's what he had to say the last time we interviewed him in 2021.
I want living survivors to be redressed properly and to be done while they're living, not waiting until we're all dead. So that's the priority, and I'm discussing that now with a new legal team that I've got in Ireland, thank God. That is very much on my side in terms of we've had enough of games. Don't want this redress to be a watered-down thing or gimmicks. It has to be proper and meaningful stuff that is going to help give the a little bit back to the people who had so much taken from them.
Now, according to thejournal.ie, in September 2021, Derek Leinster lodged legal proceedings against the Irish state, the Minister for Children and the Attorney General. Proceedings in the case were delayed on a number of occasions. During the latest hearing last month, the case was listed for mention again in February 23. In an interview with the Journal last year, Derek called for the redress scheme for survivors of mother and baby homes to be fast-tracked due to the age of many survivors. drivers. He's quoted as saying, "I'm not going to settle unless I get the right deal, even if it means I don't get the deal before I die. I'm not going to sell out to people that stood by me over all these years. At the end of the day, I want what people got under the 2002 redress scheme. I want that, so it can never happen that a small group of people can be ignored as Irish citizens. They have to be treated just the same as anybody else, regardless of the numbers that apply for redress or what religion they might have been classed as." Well, Dr. Neil Meehan was a friend of Derek Leinster's and is the head of the media and journalism faculty at Griffith College in Dublin. I contacted him yesterday asking if he wanted to partake in this morning's programme. He was only delighted to do so and sent through the following tribute.
"That is Derek Leinster, the leader of Bethany Home Survivors Fight for Justice, comes as a great shock. I was talking to Derek the day before he passed. He was full of fight as usual. He talked about his legal challenge to the Irish state for failure to give Bethany survivors access to the 2002 Residential Institutions Redress Scheme. As he kept saying, if I win, we all win. Derek played a huge role in bringing to the fore abuse of children and of women in Protestant ethos institutions. The very real mistreatment of people in Roman Catholic-run institutions was paralleled at every level in their Protestant ethos equivalents. And that should be recognised today in discussion of what happened in schools like Blackrock at Rockwell. The over 250 unmarked graves of children in Mount Jerome Cemetery are testament to failure institutionally, right up to ministerial level. That failure continues with no redress practically in sight for mother and baby home survivors. That is why Derek's last fight is so important. His court challenge has the possibility of reversing years of indifference and neglect. I am devastated, as are his family, of course, and as are all of the Bethany survivors and those who were together with Derek on this journey to gain recognition for survivors of the Bethany Home, the West Bank Orphanage, Smiley's Homes, and other institutions where children were neglected and abused. That fight will continue with Derek's passing, but we have lost a great champion and we are all saddened, and Irish society is the lesser for Derek's passing."
Dr. Neil Meehan there paying tribute to the late Derek Leinster. Derek Leinster, born in 1941, died at the weekend at his home in Rugby in England at the age of 81. May he rest in peace. Suavnas Agashia Kondo.
Kildare Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
And you're very welcome back. Hopefully you are keeping well on this Tuesday morning, wherever you're tuned into us around the county or online at kfmradio.com. As we make our way now to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District once again, and Fianna Fáil Councillor Anne Connolly joins us. Good morning to you, Anne.
Good morning, Owen, and how are you on this cold and foggy morning?
I'm good. How is the fog looking wherever you are, Anne?
Well, I'm on the current camp at the minute now, and it's poor. Visibility was poor coming in from Atangan this morning. Yeah, very poor.
Visibility along most of the roads and routes around the county actually quite poor. We had a text in from a listener on the M9 as well, just urging motorists to be mindful of that. And a couple of issues then. That, go on, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say that it was late coming down as well, you know what I mean?
It was, yeah. Anyway. It was. I had a punctured tyre this morning, so I had to get a lift in, so yeah. But anyway, we'll leave that for another day. You want the council to carry out additional drainage works at Newtown and Rathangan, Anne. What's the story here?
Yeah, look, there is a spot in Newtown and Rathangan that we've had issues before a flooding at it, but it transpired following a resurfacing of the road that little stones had gone into the gullies and into the so-called, and it blocked it. That was cleared and everything was okay. But as you can see from the reply from the council, like, we're flooding all over with this flash flooding, you know, and water is lodging for a bit of time and then subsiding. Two new so-called were put in on this road, but there's still an issue at this particular point. They will have a look at it. It could be a possibility of the drains blocked again by leaves, you know. So I'm hopeful that they'll have a look at that and maybe clear the drains again. But look at this, the flash flooding is a torrential rain we're after having over the last couple of weeks, and it's causing a lot of flooding in a lot of places with the leaves on the ground as well. But hopefully they'll have a look at that now for me shortly.
Newtown, is that out around Rathangan GAA?
Okay. Football, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, all right. Yeah. On the other side of the town then, at Ardskull, Rathangan, where you're looking for an upgrade of the footpath, are the council doing that?
Yes, I am quite confident that that will be done in the not too distant future. I did have been speaking to the area engineer over the last year or more, and she has been out to view it and has made it a commitment to do that. So as she said, the tenders are going out, so I'm quite confident that that will be done in the very shortly. Yeah.
All right. You're also calling for a couple of road improvements there at the Yellow Lock Crossroads.
Yeah, we have two estates, Yellow Lock and Woodview, coming out onto the main road at the other end of the town. And look, at traffic has gotten so busy, and particularly school mornings and all, they're finding it very difficult to come out onto the road. Look, at they have said they've no plans to put a yellow box. I have asked them to come out and have a look at that junction and see what could be done there. You know, can we put in some other measure that would help the residents of these two estates when they're coming out onto the main road?
Okay, and the final issue then that you raised, Anne, you were looking for the council to identify maybe somewhere for a sports hub in Rathangan, was it?
Yes. Look, we all know how successful the sports hub is down in Athy and in Monasterevin, you know. So we need to spread this and you know, move it all up the county. That said, look, we have the river, the canal, the Blue Way and Rathangan, fabulous amenities that need to be utilised to their fullest, you know. So this was to get the wheels in motion and maybe eventually have our own sports hub in Rathangan. I had a motion in at our budget meeting yesterday that maybe this could be put into the capital spending plan going forward. So what they have decided to do is they'll take it and we'll sort of review it and discuss it in the middle of next year, so it could be on the budget, the capital plan the following year. But just to start the wheels in motion and hopefully eventually have our own sports hub in Rathangan.
Okay, Fianna Fáil councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District for the Rathangan area. That is Councillor Anne Connolly. Thanks for joining us, Anne. Good morning to you. On the text line then, Hazel has been in touch to say Derek Leinster had two books. Indeed he did. And after we interviewed him a couple of years ago, he sent me those books personally and I still have them at home. Hannah's Shame and Destiny Unknown. Hazel says she has both as well, and they're absolutely incredible books by Derek Leinster, who has passed away at the age of 81. Mick and Meath in touch as well on the WhatsApp to say not to worry about your flat tyre, it's only flat at the bottom. Well, I can tell you, Mick, this is in an absolute jock. I was on the bike, got out to the entrance to the estate and then realised that something was definitely wrong. Had to go back then, and as I said in the newspaper review, we were staying at, in Amy's house last night, so I had to knock on the door with my tail between my legs and ask poor old niece, Amy's mam, to bring me to work. And thankfully, she did. So I'll have to go and try and get that sorted now and get a new tyre put on. I don't know if it's punctured or whether it's flat or what the story is, but I'll have to check it when I go home. Keep the messages coming in. Anyway, love to hear from you this morning on the show, 0833 97 97 97. But moving on, and the bill regarding the right to work from home has been amended and is now fit for purpose, according to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. And joining me now is Dr. Laura Bambrick, Social Policy Officer with ICTU. Good morning to you, Laura.
Morning, Owen.
Why is it now fit for purpose, and what was the issue beforehand, Laura?
Thanks, Owen. So listeners might remember back in January, the Taoiseach published a draft bill, and that was to give workers rights around making requests to work remotely. Now, many listeners might quite rightly say, well, didn't I always have the right to ask my boss, could I do anything? And that is true. You always have the right to ask, but you had no rights to be listened to. So your boss could just kick the request down the road and say, yeah, I'll get back to you. Or they could just deny it out of hand, just say absolutely not without giving it any reasonable consideration. Or you couldn't appeal their decision if you were unhappy with their refusal. You didn't think they gave it fair consideration. So what this draft bill was intended to do was to provide a legal framework. It was to provide guidance around what was required of the employee when making a request, because, of course, it has to be reasonable. You can't be, you know, a school bus driver and ask them to be working remotely. And then at the same time, it was putting obligations on employers about how they should handle requests and do so in a timely and fair manner. However, when it was published, the bill, the draft bill, was roundly criticised, not only by trade unions representing workers, but also by business representatives groups. Absolutely nobody was happy with what was being recommended. So to be fair to the Taoiseach, he heard that criticism and he invited ourselves, ICTU, in as representative for workers, and IBEC representing the business community, to come together, amend the legislation to ensure that it was fit for purpose. And that's where we are here today.
So the 13 grounds for refusal are gone, and when an employer is considering a request, they have to take their own needs into account, but now they also have to take the workers' needs and a new code of practice into account. Tell us about this code of practice then. Who's it been drawn up by?
Yeah, so as you mentioned there, Owen, from the trade union, from the workers' side, two of our main criticisms of the original bill was that it gave a full list of examples for which the business could turn down the request. And it made absolutely no reference to the employee's needs or any need for balance. And if you were unhappy, the draft bill didn't give you any grounds for going to the Workplace Relations Commission to appeal that ground. So what will happen now is, as you mentioned, those 13 grounds for refusal are all gone now. And I said, when an employer is considering a request to work remote, they absolutely must take into account the needs of the business. Nobody, including trade unions, want to do anything that would put jobs and businesses at risk. But they take in their own needs, but they also must take in the needs of the employee now and a code of practice. And that code of practice will be drawn up by the Workplace Relations Commission. And that will be setting out guidance and good practice around what is reasonable, because there's still going to be reasonable grounds for an employer to turn down a request, but also what are reasonable grounds for employees looking for that request. So it will be a sort of a how-to spelling out good guidance, good practice on dealing with requests, and that should be coming forward in the next few months. So if you then, you make your request to your employer, you don't feel that your needs or that they took into account what is required of them in this new code of practice, you now, as a worker, will be able to take a case to the WRC and say, you know, I don't feel my request was treated in accordance with this new legislation. If they find in your favour, they find, yes, you're right, you weren't given, the legislation wasn't followed, the employer could be fined up to 4 weeks of your wages and told to go back, look at the case again, having regard for the legislation. So to be fair, and or to spell out own to listeners, it's not unusual in employment legislation for there to be a penalty that if the employer is found not to be in compliance with employment law, they are penalised. And that's not intended to be a windfall for workers that you think, ha ha, I can get 4 weeks' pay. What it's intended to do is act as a deterrent that any employer who might be thinking of ignoring the legislation will think again, because there will be a cost implication if the WRC can find that they ignored this code of practice.
Okay, finally then, Laura, just to ask you, is this coming into effect immediately, and does it cover, because I know it's kind of a hybrid work bill, does it just deal with hybrid working, so some days at home and some days in the office, or can you apply to work all of your days at home?
Well, that will be, so it's part of a broader bill called a work-life balance bill. And this amendment will just deal with remote work, and that will be down to you and your employer to decide how much remote you're going to do, what the level of hybrid will be, if you're going to go fully remote working, or if it's just one day a week, or like the majority of people are doing now, either 2 days at home, 3 days in the office, or vice versa. That's going to be part of the negotiation. The first one is accepting the principle that they accept remote work, and then the second layer of discussions between the employer and employee is then usually around to what extent are they going remote. And that good guidance will be all set out in the remote work, how you reach a proper balance, which, as I said, works for the business, ensures that the business offering isn't compromised in any way, but gives the worker that work-life balance that we're all striving to achieve.
And is it coming into effect immediately?
It should be in effect before the Dáil rises for the Christmas, so okay. Around mid-December. So that was one good thing. There's many good things coming out of this negotiation of making it fit for purpose. But one of the things will be it very much fast-tracks this new worker right and allows it to get through before the Taoiseach finishes up his term as Minister for Employment and takes up the Taoiseach's office.
Okay, well, Social Policy Officer with the Irish Congress of Trade Unions explaining and outlining there that new hybrid working bill, Dr. Laura Bambrick. Thanks for joining us this morning. Laura, good morning to you.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, my next guest wrote recently, "The simple things in life sometimes bring the greatest joy, like feeding the ducks at your local pond. The next time you pay your feathered friends a visit, consider introducing some variety into the food that you give them. Just like for us humans, a balanced diet is important for wild animals. The large amounts of bread that people feed wild birds may be well-intentioned, but they could be doing them harm." Well, Dr. Ronald Ian Corby is a Associate Professor of Veterinary Medicine in Utrecht University over in the Netherlands. Dr. Ian Corby, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And thank you indeed for joining us this morning and welcome to the airwaves of Kildare. If you might tell us a little bit more about what you mean there about a balanced diet. Are we doing the wrong thing by feeding ducks and other wild birds bread?
Well, if you're only like giving them bread, you give them a lot of energy, but not a lot of nutrients. So in that sense, it's unbalanced. So if they get all the energy from bread, they don't ingest enough of the essential nutrients they need. And it's also a lack of foraging behavior, which they normally exploit when they are in the open looking for their own food.
So what would you recommend then if people listening this morning are thinking we might go down to the local canal or the local pond and feed the ducks? What would you be saying for them to bring?
So it's better to not bring any food because they can find enough in the surrounding area and it's important for their normal behavior and also to prevent spread of disease. So if we are feeding at certain locations that might attract multiple birds to the same location, which can also spread diseases. But if you want to give something, don't overdo it. So give little amounts. And the things that are better to give than bread are, for instance, like bird seed, which is higher in fat and also in essential fatty acids. that they really need. You can also find them in nuts or give them fruits and vegetables because they usually go foraging for like certain vegetables, leafy greens. So the vegetables we are looking at, which are good, are like sweet corn, lettuce and peas. Fruits and also carrots are not ideal because they have a very high sugar content. So that's more kind of resembles bread, but it's still better than bread. Or you can give something like rice, which you can give either cooked or uncooked, as long as it's not seasoned. So it should be plain rice. But that also provides mainly energy, not a lot of nutrients. So would not be my best choice. The best of these ones are either the seeds and nuts and the vegetables.
Okay, that's interesting because not only are we talking here about maybe if people are going out and they want to feed the ducks, maybe if they have small children or grandchildren or whatever, but you know sometimes if we're after cooking dinner in our house that we might throw the food out the back garden and say, oh, the birds will eat it. It might be, there might be dangers associated with that with leftover food.
Yeah. So it's not complete and balanced, and if it's seasoned or has a lot of salt, that can also give health risks, same as in people, of course. If we get a lot of junk food, it's not very healthy for us.
Okay, I know that you discussed there about not overdoing it, don't overfeed if you're going to put stuff out in the back garden, maybe not too much. What would birds usually eat then of their own accord? You know, what would they forage for?
So they will forage for greens in the surrounding area. Ducks also eat everything which is close in their environment. So also they eat small fish or even frogs, but it's mostly grass, actually.
Okay, and finally then, what about if you are to throw food out in the back garden or you throw it into the pond and it's not eaten by the birds or by the ducks? I'm sure that that would essentially cause the likes of rats and other rodents to come and take that food?
Yeah, so it can get rotten and produce toxins, which are not good for water quality, of course. But indeed, if there's too much food left and the ducks are finished or the birds are finished with the food, then it can attract other species, like, for instance, rats. And they can cause harm for the environment as well. And they can even be harmful for the duck as they prey on little ducklings and the eggs of the ducks. So that's another reason not to give too much bread. Otherwise, you might even do harm to the ducks instead of the good intention you have to give them something extra, something special.
Okay, very interesting and an interesting perspective as well. Dr. Ronald Jan Corby is Associate Professor of Veterinary Medicine in Utrecht University in the Netherlands. And yeah, I think that is quite, maybe something that people don't realise or don't recognise, that bread is not the best thing that we can be giving ducks or birds. And as Dr. Jan Corby said, bread is actually the worst option. So if you are maybe going down the canal or over to your local pond or lake, pack a few seeds or nuts, fruit and vegetables, rice, and then try not to throw leftovers out in the back garden either for the birds, because that can have a bad effect on their digestive systems. And if it's not eaten by the birds, could lead to infestations as well. So thanks to Dr. Ronald Jan Corby for joining us this morning. Let's go to the north of the county then once again, and joining me now is Fine Gael Councillor Joe Neville for the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District. Good morning to you, Joe.
Good morning, Owen. It's a long time since I heard that song.
Yeah, it's a good song, isn't it?
It is. I enjoyed it. It brought back memories. My uncle used to sing a mess when we used to do the farm. We used to do the hay in the summer years and years ago when I was young. So brought back pleasant memories.
Very good. Glad to hear it. And thanks for those words. And a couple of other people actually have texted in to say it's a great memory as well. It doesn't get played on the radio half as much as it should. All for one. And I swear. Listen, Joe, some of the issues that you have raised with the council recently. First of all, you were looking for them to review the pedestrian links to the Black Avenue from St. Catherine's Park in Leixlip.
Yeah, exactly. Look, to some of your listeners who might be aware, the Black Avenue is a lovely old area and beside Catrin's Park. So people coming from Glendale, apologies. So people coming from Glendale Estate will be able to do a nice loop walk down around by the fire station and Leak Club and up back again. So at the moment, there's a bit of a muddy area. And what I've asked the council to do is actually do a nice walk. And I think it'd be really beneficial to the area. And in fairness, all the other councillors agreed with the plan and the structure of it. So I think it would be something that they'd be able to review and put in place quite soon. So as I said, I think just a positive step for local pedestrian links.
All right. You were also looking for an update on the resurfacing of the M4 between Leixlip and Maynooth. Is that in a bad way?
Yeah. And what it really is, right, is that a lot of development, as we all know, in the north, same all over, is that we've kind of got close to the motorways. And one thing in Kildare we have probably more than other counties is motorways. And if you bring housing estates from Kilcock, from Maynooth, Leixlip, you know, and I'm sure Naas, Newbridge, Kildare, all along you can hear the road, the surface of the road. So it's not that the road itself is in a bad way, but actually the surface of the road creates a noise at certain points. And in the north of the county, they had done a great job between Maynooth and Kilcock. And it's just, you just know as soon as you drive on the part of the surface that actually it's really quiet and it brings down the noise for the local houses. So I've asked them to improve the surface of the road to bring down the noise from all the houses, the new houses in the Barnhall Meadows area and, you know, in Croydon and these salvage areas. So I would hope to have done earlier, but it'll be all done part of the rewidening Jonah scheme that they're doing, even for bus lanes and everything in the M4. So it will get done, but to be honest, it probably won't be done as soon as I would have liked.
What about the requested safety review for the River Forest estate? Did you get an update there?
I did. This is something I've been looking for now, to be honest, for the last year or two. But it actually is coming to fruition. Is that we'd hope to have the plan ready for December, and I've actually asked for not just to have a review, but actually also have ideas of how we can fix things after. Because as people might be aware, Confey College is down at the end of that estate. It's also, I think, one of the biggest estates in the county, with around 500 houses. Lovely area. But at the same time, it's just one big, huge, long road going through a housing estate with a school down the end. And, you know, it just causes traffic and you've got cars going a bit too fast up and down it. So it is a bit dangerous. And I do think certain steps, obviously know that certain steps need to be done. You've got you've got multiple buses going up that area. People in the north of the county who had read the Liffey Champion this week, there was the front page was the main one. And it's just the number of buses going up and down, which is great in itself, but obviously that causes noise, it causes busyness. And if you've got little kids walking up and down, and in fairness, elderly people as well, and all age groups, I just do think it's something that we just need to make sure before there's an accident that, you know, we have everything as safe as possible.
All right. And then the final issue that you raised with the council was the public realm review for Selbridge and Leixlip, again, looking for an update on that, Joe.
Yeah, this is something, to be honest, that has probably been a bit... bit behind. We would have liked to have got this done sooner. Probably it's something we've been looking for once again for the last number of years. Other towns in the county have got that review, and the Leixlip and Selbridge have been behind and just haven't been able to get the reviews done. And the benefit of this sort of a review is that it enables the council then to put forward plans to actually fix items. In fairness, we had a great day out at the Wonderful Barn there last week. It's the same group, the same team, the Town Renewal, were doing a scheme at the Wonderful Barn where we had 500 people turning out, in a consultation day, when normally 50 would have been a good result. So I'm just saying to the Town Renewal, we see the interest. We really see the positivity towards the work that they can do. So the plan that they can put in place for the two towns would be, you know, could be really beneficial, could really help lift the areas. And hopefully I was told in my response that we will get a full update in December. So looking forward to that, and hopefully then it can lead to positive developments in the two of the major towns in North Kildare in the years to come.
Okay, there's a message in here, Joe, on 0833 97 97 97 asking if there's any news on traffic management in Selbridge. Now, we spoke to Independent Councillor Ida Cusson a couple of weeks ago. She gave us an update for the second bridge and updates to the existing bridge in Selbridge. I know there is roadworks going on out
huge
on the Dublin Road.
Yeah.
There, Irish Water carrying out roadworks there. But is there any update? Is there any movement?
Look, that was a major topic for our meeting last week. Obviously, there's pipes being laid, and to people who might be less familiar with Selbridge, or mightn't be living there, but might be familiar with it. It's the area stretching from the bridge just out towards Weston, where there's pipes being laid outside the orchard, and everybody knows the orchard. It's one of the main shopping areas in North Clare. Gorgeous areas, busy time of year with shopping. And I know this is obviously causing difficulties because it's causing traffic issues along that stretch. So Irish Water have been, Clare County Council have been trying to, you know, work with them, try and put the best plan in place. And I know our area engineers have been really trying to work as closely as possible to Irish Water to get it done and to help the traffic restrictions, you know, so it doesn't impinge on local businesses. But look, they're progressing. You know, we'd hope to get it done, in the coming weeks. But at the same time, this is something that's just something that needs to be done. And I've often spoke about it as well before, Owen. You know, we can talk about building houses, but unfortunately, you know, we need the infrastructure, we need the sewage links, we need everything. And this is unfortunately one of those items that comes with having to, you know, with the development and growth of our towns, you know, all across the county. And that's what we've seen. We've seen Kildare, we're not behind in putting houses in. We're probably the best county at actually getting houses and we can see the increase in population. But unfortunately, that actually comes with this sort of downside in the short term. And I know it's very difficult for local business, and I know it's very difficult for local commuters. But unfortunately, it has to be done. But we do hope that it gets expedited and gets done as soon as possible.
Okay, Fine Gael councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, Joe Neville. Thanks for that, Joe, and we'll talk to you again soon. Another message in: could you please wish my granddaughter Kathleen Alison Curtis a very happy birthday today? Lots of love from your nanny June, and hope you have a fantastic day. Kathleen Alison Curtis, very happy birthday.